It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Go again. We are off and running on a brand new live broadcast. Yes, indeed, this program is live. It is the 14th day of December 2017. I don't know why I tell people this program is live. It's only live if you're listening live. You get my meaning. But this is not a rebroadcast from some. No. Remember me? I'm the guy who almost never takes the night off. Who am I? I'm Bob Kincaid. Hi. And it is thorn in the side Thursday on the horn, the 14th of December, like I said, 2017. We're reaching the midpoint of the last month of the year. I'm told that we are 5x5 at headon.live, and nobody really knows what's going on with the stream at White Rose Society. And I'm sorry for that, but still. Now, the first thing we have to do to get any given program started is to thank our subscribers. And on this 14th day of the month, we have three. Thank you to James in California. And thank you very kindly to Matt, also in California. Matt in San Francisco. And thank you to Joseph. And I don't have an address for Joseph. So thank you very kindly for that. And thank you for a lovely note. I got it early this morning from Carolyn. Carolyn said, "Merry Christmas, Bob. You bring me so much joy throughout the year. Thank you for your dedication. I couldn't make it through these tough times without you." That warmed my heart, Carolyn. It really, really did, and I thank you so very much. So the feeling is mutual. I'd be a mess without you guys too. You know, remember, this is a two-way street. These 3 hours we spend together every Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it means a lot. It means a lot to hear from you and know that what happens here makes your days better. Because, well, sometimes the news can get a little grim. And sometimes I wonder if, you know, we're making things. But the world is what the world is. I remember a long time ago when Ted Turner, who was a genius, who had 1,000 ideas a day, and every now and then one of them would be a real humdinger. He got tired of the steady litany of "if it bleeds, it leads" journalism, and he created a program, and I think he created it on TBS back then, when it still had a W in front of it. It was called Good News, and it was, I think, was it an hour or 30 minutes? I can't recall. But it was nothing but good news. And it failed spectacularly. Not for want of talent, not for want of writing, not for want of material. Well, okay, so kind of, some of it was kind of a want of material kind of thing, because it's sort of like, you know, you're driving around, cops never put the lights on and pull you over and say, hey, just wanted you to know you're doing a great job out here, you're staying in your lane, you're signaling, you're braking appropriately, you're not using your... You're not using your handheld devices or texting while driving. You're not wasted out of your mind or anything. Just wanted to tell you how awesome you are. That doesn't happen. And so the little, you know, it's hard to find that good stuff. But thank you, Carolyn, for those kind words. And speaking of kind words, I heard from our buddy Tony in Chico, one of our longest-standing subscribers. He sent me a link to a video that's just freaking awesome. You can see it for yourself at some point. Somebody spent a lot of time fitting Donald Trump's head onto David Byrne's body into the Talking Heads video. What is it? Once in a Lifetime? Same as it ever was. Same as it... Spent a lot of time. And it's a delight to watch. It really, really is. But Tony said, I hope you're well. Yeah, reasonably so, Tony. Thank you. I'm a little behind on podcasts, but wanted to say wow to you on your analysis of the Alabama Senate race the past few months. You were really on the ball. Thank you. That is most... That's most gratifying. And I do sincerely thank you for the kind words, Tony. And Randy in PA with an early email says, welcome to the soon-to-be-defunct horn. Thanks, Agit Pie. Referring to, no, we're not going anywhere. No. The horn is here as long as we can keep the bills paid. Eating once in a while is kind of cool, too. But we're not going anywhere. We're not soon-to-be-defunct by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, hell... If one of the things, you know, one of the reasons that things are as well, our crappy Frontier internet connection that sucks so monumentally. Yeah, that's a business level connection, just in case you were wondering. That's the service you get when you purchase enterprise business level service from Frontier Communications. So I don't know how they can charge me more to give me shittier service. Don't ask, right? Don't ask. So I do appreciate the little bit of, you know, gee, Bob, you really nailed it. Because, well, I'm about the only one who did. I mean, I looked around a little bit. There was nobody out there saying Doug Jones can win way back, you know, 3 months ago. Oh, no. And like I said, I originally thought he was a sacrificial lamb. But, no. Got it right. Not that the for-profit media is out there looking for people who get it right. The number of people who get shit wrong constantly and are paid handsomely to do it. Well, I mean, look, like I said, the reason I watched MSNBC the other night for the returns instead of CNN was that MSNBC had 100% less Santorum. He's wrong. I mean, even a stopped clock is right twice a day, and Rick Santorum can't even rise to that level. So thanks. Really thanks. And I guess we're going to, I have a feeling that's going to be a topic of conversation tonight. And look, let me make something clear. You're welcome. This really is, we try to do something decidedly different with this program. Conversation radio is a real thing, just as a reminder. And people get a chance to speak their mind here. Unlike just about any other similarly situated program. Tweaking the levels a little bit, trying to get things a little bit louder. But what happens here doesn't happen many other places. A chance to really sort of develop ideas to their fullest. And so if you've never participated in this program before, I encourage you to. If, as I've said before, if you can't, well, it's not going to be much more laid back on any other program because a lot of programs out there, you're going to be up against commercial breaks and hard breaks for the computer affiliates in Denver and things like that. That doesn't happen here. So I want to encourage you when the phones are open for your participation. If you've never called, try it. You'd be surprised how easy it is. And along the way, of course, I would be remiss if I did not note that we do maintain a chat room for your enjoyment. And if you would like to be part of the Madcap Multimedia Real-Time Zany Wacky Extravaganza, that is the Horn chat room. All you got to do is click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in where you will be met by the likes of Anatole and Erther and Hoghead and Ralps and VT Blom and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a spacing guild master has once again folded space to become Man Cave. And also in the bold face type this evening, midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. It's a happy group, and the more, the merrier. So try it out, by all means. Let's see. Erther. Erther's in with a comment early. Ajit Pai, that's the chairman of the FCC, little right-wing tool that he is. Ajit Pai is the genial, chuckly fascist that smiles and compliments you while he's breaking the knife handle off, you know, somewhere between your ribs. That sounds about right. And he's seeing as how I watched his remarks this afternoon, he's a snide little jackass, too. Oh, you silly, hysterical people that want a free and open internet. The sky's not going to fall just because we're going to let the ISPs and the giant telecoms and cable companies screw you as hard as they want to, as often as they want. I mean, it's going to be so cool. And then he took off on, and it's hard to feel warm and fuzzy and lovable toward him, admittedly. But then he took off on outfits like Google and Yahoo and what have you, saying that they were already doing bad stuff on the internet. And the logic was sort of a fail. Because you don't justify doing more bad stuff with the internet by pointing out that people are already doing bad stuff. Just saying. Scott and Punky with an early note. Subject line, blind pigs and stopped clocks. As my great-great-aunt Emma always used to say, at least until they dragged her off to the Virginia State Home for the Bewildered, even a blind pig finds a stopped clock once in a while. I'll bet she did. I will just bet she did. So just to give you a quick update on where things stand this evening, and it ain't happy news. Here at the middle of the month, we find ourselves dealing with a whew, and thanks to Carolyn and the aforementioned subscribers for keeping it from being as bad as it otherwise would be. We got a $495 fundraising goal. tonight. Tomorrow night, Friday on the Front Porch. Ouch. It goes up to $695. You know, we try to raise $200 an evening. And so when we don't, it gets, scary. Yeah. I don't know. Is $495, does $495 merit? Lassie? Lassie, come here, girl. Come on. Come on, babe. There you are. Lassie? Go tell folks that the horn's down a well again. No, Lassie. Wait a minute. Why are you running around with that big German oh no. Lassie. Oh, damn it. Well, I don't guess Lassie's going to be running off for the sheriff anytime soon. She seems to be busy. But we are. We got a $495 fundraising hole. But there's some good news. We did not wipe out Chris in Germany's challenge last night. The Hallelujah Doug Jones One challenge. And Chris has kindly agreed to extend it to this evening. So we'll try again. With a fundraising goal of $495, Chris has a challenge on the table. She will match the first $100 that comes in. And the sooner that happens, the better. And so if that happens, then a $495 fundraising hole becomes a $295 fundraising hole. And thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs just turned it into a $125 challenge. So that becomes even more. That becomes even bigger. That if we can raise $125, it becomes $250. I'm pretty sure you don't want me selling bucket pudding or anything like that. Although I have to tell you that this time of year can be rough. It can be difficult under any number of different scenarios. But I wanted to take a moment to tell you about something new from the hardworking scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. It's a completely bullshit account, just like all the products that don't come from Horn Labs. Yes, new for the holiday season. Miraculous mistletoe from Horn Nutraceuticals. Yes, you were told all your life that mistletoe is poison. And you know what? It is. It's terribly poisonous. It's right up there with freaking hemlock. It's so poisonous. That's why we call it miraculous mistletoe. Because given the fact that there is absolutely no real mistletoe in miraculous mistletoe from Horn Nutraceuticals, that means that you can take all that you want of it, and you can have all the holiday cheer, and you can even trick people by holding the little capsule over their head and say, "Ah, but this is mistletoe. Now you have to kiss me." No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. We've got problems with that right now. So don't do that. But yes, miraculous mistletoe only from Horn Nutraceuticals. Well, we guarantee that it is free range, cage free, cruelty free, vegan, gluten free, non-GMO, and free of any nutritional value whatsoever. Miraculous mistletoe only from Horn Nutraceuticals. You know, I've never cared much for mistletoe. Who am I kidding? It's just that nobody's much cared for kissing me under the mistletoe. It makes a fella sad this time of year. But I've got my miraculous mistletoe for whenever I can get Agnes back home from 90 miles away, and well, Katie bar the door. But with miraculous mistletoe only from Horn Nutraceuticals, Well, if you'll shell out, if you'll shell out the $104.92 for a 3-month supply, we will happily send you a bundle of little test strips that you can use in the privacy and comfort of your own hermitage and find out what we already know, that miraculous mistletoe from Horn Nutraceuticals is absolutely worthless. No nutritional value whatsoever, and in the case of mistletoe, no mistletoe whatsoever, so you can take it with confidence. Miraculous mistletoe from Horn Nutraceuticals. Accept no substitutes. Post no bills. Use no hooks. This side up. FOB. COD. DNA. Only from Horn Nutraceuticals. Yes, miraculous mistletoe. So there we are. We've got a fighting chance to crawl out from under the, crawl out a little ways up the walls of a deep and slickety hole this evening. And if you would like to be part of that, just run on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the contribute tab, fill out the very little bit of information, and boom, you'll be right there. Okay, so thank you very kindly. If you don't like that, there's always the U.S. Postal Service, the Horn, checks and money orders only, please, because at any time of the year, the folks in those processing facilities can get a little grabby. It's happened to us in the past, and we know it. Checks and money orders made payable to the Horn. Send it to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And if you let me know that it's on the way, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout, and he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck so that the mailbox spiders won't try to chew his hand off. That would be awesome, and maybe he can pop in and pop out so quickly that he won't have to run across the grand exalted noble 32nd degree Kleagle Cyclops wizard thingy clan guy. Yeah. All right. thanks for the reassurance, brother Deacon Asa. I think I'm going to have to promote you from apprentice, little ray of sunshine, all the way, you know, all the way up to the full order. Here we go again, Bob Sycophants chiming in. Asa adds, but I'll only place an order for your murderous moleskin if you can assure me that it'll give me a raging boner that'll last throughout the holidays. It will give you anything you want, because it's entirely, that's right, imaginary. Hey, wow, that's huge. Thank you very kindly to Silent R. Lamar. We've just knocked down Chris's challenge, and Ralph's challenge only remains. So we got $25 to go on the challenges. And let's see, what would that leave us at? $4.95. Oh, to carry the 19. That would leave us at $245 to go to come up even. Thank you. Thank you to Silent R. Lamar. That is, in fact, huge. And thank you very kindly to Keith. That means we only got $15 to go to finish out the challenge. I cannot thank you enough. That's tremendous, and it takes a great weight off of my mind. Because the middle of the month, for some reason or another, is a tough time, and the very tail end of the month is a tough time, as far as subscriptions go. So, with that having been said, shall we discuss the net neutrality business a little bit? I don't trust Republicans when they tell me that the free market is going to make everything all better. Among other things, it reminds me of Milo Minderbinder from Catch 22 trying to get Yossarian to eat the chocolate-covered cotton because he had bought too much cotton and bought too much chocolate and couldn't unload either one. It is, of course, inedible. But that's the way capitalism works. And telling me that the tender mercies of capitalism are going to make my... Because, see, Ajit Pai... And by the way, the vote was 3-2 along strict party lines. Ajit Pai made a specific reference that is relevant to me, saying that because... The idea of net neutrality stifles creativity. That if we can, you know, if they did what they did, that suddenly all would be frisbees and wheat checks with broadband deployment in rural America. Yeah, they use words like rural America as a dog whistle to say, we're gonna finally provide some decent internet to the rubes in the heartland. Well, I've been living in West Virginia during the entirety of the time in which the internet has come into fruition. At the very beginning, when we started this little enterprise back in 2005. We were paying $1,000 a month for one half of a T1. That's right. One half of a T1 was $1,000 a month. I think back to that and I wonder, it was a miracle we got. It was a miracle we got off the ground. And it sucked. Back then, Frontier wasn't Frontier. Back then, Frontier was Verizon. And that connection went down, even though it was guaranteed. I mean, it was a half of a freaking T1. And it ran our and we ran our phones off of it and ran the program and yada, yada, yada. And it went down every time it thundered. Not when it rained, not when it lightninged. It went down when it thundered. Our T1 line was a chihuahua that ran under the bed every time it thundered. And they had no clue. And yet this is along the same line. Silent R. Lamar says, may I say... When a Republican said he or she is going to give you a tax break, please ask them, what will you be losing? Or what are they going to break? I know. And Ajit Pai, as Arthur points out, saying, yeah, the law will allow us to do all these things, but that doesn't mean we'll do any of them. We just like knowing the power's there, right? Was that a DSL phone connection, Bob? Asked Steve from Georgia Stanton. No, it's a goddamn T1. From the phone company. So it was, you know, it was coming down their phone lines. It sucked. And we have over the years tried everything under the sun to get as much, to get as high a degree of reliability as we could possibly have. And from time to time when I talk with the folks who do the tech end at Progressive Voices, they're like, who's your provider? I said, Frontier. You know, oh, you poor guy. It's like everybody in the country knows how bad Frontier Communications is. But in all the time, and you know, this goes back to dial-up in 1995. That's when we got our first computer. The infrastructure has never been worth a damn in this state. Now, there's one cable company, Suddenlink, that promises blazing speeds, but when everybody gets home at the end of the workday, all of a sudden it falls down to nothing. We had Shentel Communications for a while. It was a cable hookup, and they couldn't even provide enough bandwidth. They couldn't even provide enough bandwidth to make sure that I could run one miserable connection up to the White Rose streamer at 64 kbps. Not even CD audio quality. They couldn't keep me connected at 64 kbps on the upside. It was abysmal. At one point in time, Ben Birch ran the trace route on Shentel and said, here's your pro. He actually engineered their troubleshooted, that's a tormented construction, their connection for them. And they went, well, dang, he was right. How'd he know that? Him smart. And now we're with Frontier again. And they suck. They don't suck some of the time. They suck all of the time. And I'm pretty sure they don't suck because of net neutrality. They suck because they're operating under a capitalist model that allows them to pour all of the money that they come in, everything possible they pour into their shareholders and devote next to nothing to infrastructure. I know this because I have a pretty decent relationship with the tech guys who come out. And we talk about what they spend their time doing. I'm not going to give, you know, I'm not going to get any names or anything, but, you know, for pity's sakes. I am exactly 2 miles from the CO here. And the highest speed that I can get on a good day downhill with a tailwind is 12 down and 2 up. And that's because it's a bonded line. It's actually two connections braided together. Randy wants to know, what did Frontier recently fix for your connection? I can't tell you specifically, but I know it was down at the CO, and I know that there was one. There was a wire crossed or a switch, or you know, the polarity was out of phase with the flageolet, and it was done in 2 seconds, and it only took a week to fix. But I took, in particular, I took that promise about all the frisbees and wheat checks we're going to have in rural broadband with a whopping big dose of salt. Because these internet providers are not in the business of making stuff good for us, you, we. They are in the business of making a profit. Profit first, everything else after. And so the FCC deliberately ditched its ability to regulate the internet like a public utility and internet service providers. This is not going to work out well. I'm not screaming the sky is falling. I think Randy in PA may be a little bit more grim than even I am. This does not spell the demise of the horn. But if I get some sort of notification from Frontier Communications, dear Bob, the shitty internet service we provide you is going to get even shittier unless you pay us ransom to get your program out. Well, I'll let you know. And I don't dare say it. You know, how could Frontier Service get any worse than it already is? Because I'm sure somewhere there's some corporate accountant who's looking at the 92nd decimal point, decimal place, and thinking, oh, you know, we can make $1 billion right there. I mean, I've seen a while back we had lightning run in on Frontier's lines. We've lost probably by the time all said and done, we've lost north of $5,000 worth of equipment from lightning running in. Not on the power lines. There's nothing here that's not behind an uninterruptible power supply. Thanks to folks like Randy and Fab. No, it ran in on the phone lines. And I screamed and kicked and carried on until they finally came out here and went, oh, son of a gun. We ain't grounded worth damn. Yeah. And so, boom. We're grounded and we're safe now, and I'm still in the process of trying to get them to pay up. They, of course, do not want to, because it might make their shareholders cry. Yeah, big bad Bob. No, not Mexican bad Bob, the original bad Bob. How do you want your horse, Mr. Bob? Badoo. Sorry, I just love that scene. Just a brief little tiny cameo in The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. Stacy Keach as Bad Bob. I love that scene. The original Bad Bob, the mean one. No, Big Bad Bob's gonna you know, we'll destroy Frontier if they actually pay for the shit that they destroyed here. Right. I sent our wildly expensive six-line telephone system off to have it fixed. And they wrote back and said, you know, just, they sent it, but it's like sending you back the body. They sent it back and said, you know, you just need to buy a new one. Thanks, guys. Right. Yeah, the thing is, though, Randy says there are available at least DSL surge protectors for that. They get really snotty at Frontier if you say that you want to run your... Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. It's terrible. Don't do that. It's awful. Void your warranty and shit. If... Scott and Punky with a note. Here's a notable quote from my online pal, Mark Evanier, at newsfromme.com. Since net neutrality has been repealed, can we all pay our internet service providers to slow down Donald Trump's tweets to, say, one a year? Now, that would be noteworthy. And that, I presume that Ajit Pai is something that has been to, maybe he's an engineer, but I presume he's been to law school somewhere along the way. Engineers do very well in law school, by the way. The two groups that do the best in law school are engineers and English majors. One for the writing, the former for their analytical skills, and the latter for their writing skills. But that was something Ajit Pai pointed to. Well, Twitter keeps your stuff from showing up, so why can't the poor little put-upon ISPs do the same thing? To the extent that you see anything on the front end at all soon, what you're going to see is fast lanes, and it's already out there. It's already happening. Verizon with the NFL, Sprint with Hulu, AT&T snapping up DirecTV, and not chart, and in all these instances, not charging any bandwidth time when you use the service. And this sort of validates all of that. And a lot of this will probably lead to further corporate mergers and acquisitions with the really huge ISPs going for broke. And trying to acquire some of these content providers. Somewhere in some corporate boardroom, some vile CEO is thinking, oh man, if we could own Netflix. I mean, do you remember when AOL was a big thing and AOL bought Time Warner, which had in turn already purchased CNN? And right, AOL barely, does AOL even exist anymore? I don't know. But they came and they went. But this is, he blathered on, Ajit Pai did, about how this was going to lead to the rollout of gigabit Ethernet and 5G service on the wireless side. You know, we just hadn't. It was as though the ISPs were some sort of deity toward which we had been insufficiently obsequious. That we had not brought enough baskets of fruit and human flesh. To satisfy the gods, that they demanded a greater sacrifice. But the problem is, with the greater sacrifice, I suspect that we will not see any. And in the long run, it's all just one great goddamn big dodge. I mean, everybody, I'm not going to say, you know, calm down or anything. Yeah, exactly, Arthur, and a free iPad in every pot. Damn straight. The bottom line with all of this nastiness is that it provides an opportunity to let these massive providers rake in more money and you can't do anything about it. That was why they so badly needed regulation in the first place, because there was no accountability. I have here in rural America, I have one telephone company and one cable company, and they both suck a lot. And somebody else is not going to come in here and offer better service. The fundamental flaws of all of this faith-based economics, of which the conservatives and the Republicans are so godforsaken enamored, is that it just doesn't work. Now again, I'm rural. I don't know what it's like, but you know we've got listeners in most of the boroughs of New York. We got listeners in LA and San Francisco and Portland and Seattle. We got listeners in Chicago. We got listeners in Pittsburgh, Philly, Jersey, you know, highly populated areas. We got friends in Atlanta. How much choice do you, and I mean, this is not a rhetorical question. Do you, in those highly populated areas, Do you have a massive amount of choice to the point where you can hardly decide which provider to go with? I'm asking out of my ignorance. You know, Phoenix, Houston, are you just chock-a-block with, golly Moses, there's 92. How am I ever going to pick which one is the best internet provider out of these 92 internet service providers I have to choose from? Now, it could be that I'm going to get email. Remember, I don't give the email out very often. That's a bad thing on my part. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. I don't give that out very often, but I should. And so there. If you're in a major metropolitan area, are you awash in awesome internet? And since Ajit Pai today claimed that this was just a rollback of something that's only been around for a couple of years, we're going back to the internet the way it was. Really? Dial-up? Because that's what I'm afraid of. Did you see a decrease in the number of service providers in the last couple of years? Is the capitalist competition among internet service providers in major metropolitan areas? I mean, are they offering you signing bonuses? Really? Are they giving out Frisbees and wheat checks? A new car! Is that happening? Do you have, $500 down and $250 up service? You know, because that's the other side of the coin. Here with me, if I decided, okay, well, screw it with Frontier because they do suck so much. To get unlimited use service through the cable company. Oh, well, back up. It's going to cost me $150 a month to get like, oh, 100 gig plan. I'm talking off the top of my head. I don't have it right in front of me. But it's metered bandwidth, and it's nuts. And it just goes up the more you want. And you can't get an unlimited plan unless you go with a business plan. And if you do that, you're looking at like $600 a month. And remember, these are the folks who couldn't even provide me, make sure that I had 64 kbps on the upside 24 hours a day. 7 days a week. Randy in PA remembers those times. Randy was very, very, very helpful and very observant, and would send me emails. And I'd get up in the morning, and Bob, stream's down. And that was every freaking day. I mean, we're talking about a stream crashing when there's absolutely no one on it. And this is back before we started having the humongous problems with White Rose Society. And I hope we're, you know, this isn't me, this particular portion of the program is not me kvetching about the pathetic quality of the internet as it comes into these hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. I'm using what we experience as an example of why what happened today was, well, it wasn't dumb, it wasn't stupid. This was entirely calculated. This was planned. This was, well, if there was anything criminal in it, it would be a conspiracy. This is giving in to the fondest, dirtiest little wishes of the Time Warners and the Comcasts and the AT&Ts of the Verizons of the world. Agit Pie, he came to the FCC from what, Verizon, and he's still making money from Verizon investments. So he was one great big walking ball of conflict of interest through this whole thing. And during the public comment period, when more than 20 million people chimed in, the vast majority of whom said, leave it alone. Well, it did turn out that there were 2 million phony, baloney, fake, ginned up, frauded up, rubed up, not real comments posted via bots using the personal information of people whose accounts had been hacked in various places, you know, like over there at Equifax, who should be out of fucking business, but that's a different story. Yeah. But Ajit Pai is conflicted out the gazoo. But in order for that to matter, you actually have to have a Congress that cares about that. And our Congress is just a little too busy right now. They've got a lot of stuff they've got to do. I mean, they got lots of women to sexually harass. And beyond that, they've got a deficit to blow up. They've got tax cuts to create for the very richest people in the United States. Randy said, I thought you didn't believe in conspiracies, Bob. I never said that. Conspiracies are real. A conspiracy is a real word, and it's something that really happens. It has a very clear legal definition. I don't believe in wild-eyed bullshit conspiracy. I don't want to use the word theory, but fantasies, conspiracy fantasies. You know, like you can get over there at Alex Jones's website, where the Illuminati are conspiring with Hillary Clinton to create a super race of people who are half jellyfish and half monkey, and are going to conquer the earth by turning all the frogs gay. That's the stuff I don't buy into. Okay, well, we've got a check-in here. Andy the Angry Jew. 3 to 4 choices in Chicago, where I live. Really? Chicago? You got 3 or 4 choices. Whoa. There in New York, Steve says, broadband is awful here. You get one choice for a cable provider here per area where you live. I actually often use my mobile phone to tether any devices because it's faster than cable. In New York. Arthur says, here in Gainesville, Florida, we have Cox Communications and AT&T. I think we can also get internet from Dish Network. I believe GRU, our city-owned gas, electric, and water utility, offered internet service some years ago. I don't know if they still do. I'm using Cox right now. Gainesville has a population of about 130,000. It's the home of the University of Florida. Oh, I well know. I'm an SEC football fan, remember? So I'm guessing that if I just did this for the rest of the evening, I would find that nobody out there is having a great internet experience. Because there's just not a lot of great internet service providers. And it's not a market that you can actually break into very easily. For instance, just as a gentle reminder, some years back, Joe Manchin managed to finagle $20 million out of the federal government specifically to expand rural broadband access in his state, West Virginia. Now, if you had something like that, I would think you would take that $20 million check, you'd stick it in the bank, and then you'd start talking to the internet service providers all over the state. And you'd say things like, well, where are the unserved, start with unserved, and then move to underserved areas. And you'd start doling out the money based on who said they could, let them bid it in. You know what Joe did, though? He took that $20 million check, endorsed it, and handed it to Verizon, and that's when Verizon left. Thanks for the money, Joe. See ya. Have fun with that shitty internet you got there. We love you, Joe. Arthur pointing out, yeah, it's a natural oligopoly, like most infrastructure. You can't have a million mom-and-pop ISPs. The USDA used to pass out the occasional grant for outfits that wanted to expand internet. You could get $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 million or 20. But we see how that worked out. Note coming in from Tom in the Bay Area. Here in civilization at my home in Marin County, my DSL is much worse than yours. Really? Damn. I'm also about 2 miles from the central office. I use a local ISP. In general, they're pretty good, but their service runs on AT&T's lines and equipment. My internet service sucks more. I'm lucky to get more than one down and half up. AT&T's service, I understand from neighbors, is about the same. Same deal for any other independents. I sometimes have to use a hotspot on my cell when the DSL just stops for a few minutes. The only real other option is cable from Comcast. I may have to switch to them. At least it's faster, but everyone knows that Comcast sucks. Man, Marin County? Beloved Marin County? Dream of my heart, Marin County? The place I would move to in a minute if I could figure out how, Marin County? Damn. And you know what? Jesus Christ, that's, you can throw a rock from where Tom is and hit the beating heart of the internet industry in the United States and most of the world. And Tom and I are friends from way back. Part of this, Tom's been with this community for a long time. I never knew that, Tom. And it's ridiculous for Ajit Pai to say, well, you know, Tom there in the Bay Area is going to get him some super-duper ultra-fast gigabit Ethernet internet just lickety-split now that we've freed the ISPs from the vicious lashes of government. Wait a minute, we're going to need reverb for this. Government regulation. That's bullshit. Meanwhile, way down at the other end of California, Scott and Punky say, since you asked, in our region of San Diego, actually Scott says my, but I always change that to the first person plural because I like to take Punky and Chirps the Cat into account. In our region of San Diego County, there's Cox Cable and ATT U-verse for home TV and internet. In another part of the county, there's Spectrum, formerly Time Warner Cable. I've had AT&T U-verse since late 2008, and I've been relatively happy with it in terms of content choice, speed, and price. I would never, ever have Cox Cable, having worked for them briefly in the very early 2000s. They're a truly awful anti-union company. I'd do without cable and internet if they were the only choice in town. That's how bad they are. And let me offer that caveat to my constant critiques of Frontier. One of the other reasons that I put up with them is that as compared to these rapacious and predatory cable companies, just crummy cable company here, at least I know that the guys who come and fix the internet when it gets broken, those guys are union guys. Those guys are members of the CWA, the Communications Workers of America, and Frontier is constantly squeezing them to try to, well, they'd really like for them to go away so that they can pay them a buck and a half an hour and tell them to like it. But they've got good union jobs, and they've got good union pensions and good union benefits, good union health care, and they're super competent. They know what the hell they're doing. They're not like the random dudes who look like they just walked out of a bar that show up with the cable company. Randy in PA says, I've got 1.5 down and 0.8 up from Earthlink, which runs over Verizon's wires. I'm 16,500 feet away as the wire runs from the hub. And see, if I was down there within like 300 feet of the CO, they tell me I could have like 30 down and 5 up for the same money. Great. But I don't think I don't think physics is what's getting in the way there. At least that's not what I've been led to understand. It's a matter of infrastructure. Okay, let's get the international perspective on this. ISPs in Sydney. Just for comparison, here in Sydney, Australia, there are about 10 major suppliers and about 10 smaller providers. Most offer unlimited ADSL 2 Plus for about $60 Australian a month, which is what I have, 30 of which is line rental. I haven't checked it for a while, but as it uses the old copper wire network, it's nowhere near as fast as it should be. I haven't looked at the NBN plans yet, as I still don't have it in my area, and going by reviews of those who have it, the Liberals' mixed technology plan, which is taking longer and costing more to roll out than the original FTTP Labor Party plan, isn't much better than the ADSL2, signed Robert in Oz. And see, I remember via John Fox, I remember when the ADSL was first coming out, and John was having fits. Tom in the Bay Area following up, subject line Marin County. Yes, marvelous Marin County, where the mean house price is well over, reverb, $1 million. Tom adds, I'm not in a rural part of the county either. Yeah, short of hitting the Powerball, I ain't moving to Marin anytime soon. But I guess I saw some graphic somewhere, and of course you can often be led astray by this sort of thing. But Marin is like one of the healthiest places in America, best healthcare access, that kind of stuff. And best, I think maybe it was measuring lifespan. Best lifespan, life expectations and so forth. And the one time I was out there, I just thought it was freaking beautiful. There's that, too. Well, there we go. Thank you, Scott and Punky. From 2012, things may be even worse now. The U.S. ranks 28th in the world in mobile internet speeds. And I was glad to hear from Robert and Oz. On the other hand, I don't think we've got any community members in, say, South Korea. I've heard that internet speeds in South Korea are crazy fast, and they're pretty damn fast in Japan too. I know we've got friends in Japan. So maybe if they're listening via the podcast or something, I'll hear later. But, as Marty points out, the 60 Australian is about $46 US. Sounds about right. But it's possible to have, fast internet. Oh, and by the way, during the other other blatherings, and I don't did everybody just tune in and watch this this afternoon? At one point, just to make it nice and dramatic, a guy came and whispered in Ajit Pai's ear, and they advised everybody to get out of the room and leave everything, purses, bags, briefs, and the camera stayed on, and everybody left, and they brought in the bomb-sniffing dog, and then they came back in and fucked us. And that's when Ajit Pai started talking about hysteria over the end of net neutrality. And he made it sound like anybody who had any concerns whatsoever was just a loon. But as soon as the vote was taken, I started seeing news stories popping from the Washington Post, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune, The Verge, Vox, Vice, Yahoo News, all kinds of outlets saying, yeah, they just screwed us. And it seems statistically impossible that everybody would be getting it wrong at the same time. It's kind of like when you take a look at, remember back in the bad old days of the reign of error, when W got behind the Healthy Forests Initiative, and it turned out the Healthy Forests Initiative, the purpose of it was to cut down all the trees, and then he had a Clear Skies Initiative, and the Clear Skies Initiative's purpose was to allow more pollution into the air. It right. Yeah, this is that. Randy points out that a lot of Comcast cable is on the old buried 1980s 5.9 coax, not the relatively new 2006Q coax. Verizon Fios runs on fiber optic cable to your home and coax usually within your home. Yeah, not here. Hell, it for all I know, part of my problem with Frontier may be the tweakers out stealing the copper from time to time. Let's see, we've got a check-in from Isaac. I have Spectrum cable in Columbus, 117 megs down, 15 megs up, $64 a month. That's the best that I've heard anybody mention. Angelo, meanwhile, asks, hey, how's deregulation of aviation working out for the country? Well, that goes all the way back to Ronnie Reagan. And the flying experience has only gotten shittier. But one of the things that Ajit Pai was blathering on about was how we've got to have the bandwidth to accommodate the Internet of Things. And you know that was like getting slapped on your sunburn, at least for me, because the Internet of Things drives me bananas. The Internet of Things is one of those aspects to internet culture that makes me pretty sure that humanity is not long for this planet. Or that if we are, we're eventually going to evolve into sedentary blobs of protoplasmic goo. Because we just can't... We can't cope with the idea of actually going into the kitchen, actually putting the filter in the coffee pot, actually putting the coffee inside the filter, closing the door, pouring the water in the reservoir, putting the pot back under the... And no. And then having to wait while the coffee gets made. It's unbearable. And don't you want a refrigerator that can tell you when your parsnip winter vegetable root vegetable medley yogurt is nearing its end date? I mean, don't you want to get emails from your goddamn toaster? Because, you know, that whole making a grocery list thing is so much harder than just having your refrigerator call you at the grocery store and say, "Don't forget to buy the lettuce, Dave." Jesus, we're fucking simpletons. It's not labor saving, you know, because that's not labor. As I've mentioned, I have a real passion, and I was telling Chris in Germany about this. I have a real passion for a 1960-ish book, and I've mentioned it repeatedly here because I want everybody to go back and read it. It's cheap. Called Night Comes to the Cumberlands by a man named Harry Caudill. And it's a history of how Appalachia got to be Appalachia, with a particular focus on the eastern Kentucky, the part of Appalachia that's eastern Kentucky. And in 1960, he was a young lawyer of some considerable success, I suppose. And his family came from eastern Kentucky. And he sort of wanted to figure out why people were the way they were. And he was living in the middle of, you know, the coal mono economy there. And along the way, he talks about the habits of the mountain. He refers to hillbillies as the mountaineer. And he talks about how for, you know, near 200 years, they lived extremely simply, but relatively successfully. And that when the coal industry came along, they were completely bowled over by the availability of material stuff, and talked about how the mountaineer, when he became the coal miner, would spend a ton of money on good clothing, flashy clothes, and that he would do the same for his wife. And that had a certain echo for me, because they called one of my grandfathers, they called him the Count. One, he was really good at doing sums in his head, but the other is he dressed like freaking royalty. And he talks about how most people in Appalachia, most working people in Appalachia, were never able to set anything aside, because they were always after the next thing. And so they stayed pretty well broke. If they weren't spending their money on liquor or gambling, then they were spending, and they were, you know, they were trying to make their fairly miserable lives feel a little bit less so. And so it is to this day. Only it's expanded far beyond Appalachia, and it's the country writ large now. And the Internet of Things is part of it. Okay, I understand having a TV that will connect to the internet so that you don't have to run an HDMI cable from your computer to your TV. I get that. Okay, that, I'm not counting that in the Internet of Things. Exactly. Wait a minute. First cowbell of the evening. Earther pointing out, oh, cool. Now my Sexatronic 5000 can have an affair with Bob's toaster. See how it works? Exactly. But there are things, you know, your refrigerator's purpose is to keep things that need to stay cold, cold. Your freezer's purpose is to keep things that are frozen, frozen. And beyond its ability to do that, do you really need to have a relationship with it? Is this an outgrowth of the evangelicalization of America, where, you know, you start out with your personal relationship with your personal Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and now we need a personal relationship with the Uniblab 10,000 that's inside your Sanyo refrigerator with the transparent aluminum fucking doors? And Jack in Shreveport says, I think it's more about monitoring your every move inside your own home and collecting data on when you do things, from opening the refrigerator to going to the bathroom, and then how to profit from that info. Oh, I think you're probably right, Jack. I'm just looking at the more anthropogenic angle of it. Yeah, Steve in New York, channeling his inner geezer. Oh, for shame. I remember when we had to actually get up to change the TV channel. I remember when the remote control was called having a kid. Boy, get up and put it on channel 3. Boy, get up and put it on channel 6. You know, it only went up to 13, and then you got you. Don't turn it so fast, you'll strip the gears, boy. Yeah. Meanwhile, a little bit of pushback, courtesy of Michael and Madison. Come on, Bob, Internet of Things. Come on, Bob. I find it pretty damn handy to be able to monitor my security system remotely, arm it if I forgot, or let in a friend if I'm not there, and being able to control my LED lights or my AV receiver from my phone, even if I am on my couch, gives me a lot more customization options. That's the Internet of Things, too. Jim's Alexa, that's Internet of Things. It's not all about weird gimmicky toasters and egg cartons and shit. That being said, not sure what it all has to do with killing net neutrality. Sounds like bullshit to me. Not you, the anti-net neutrality people. Agit Pi was saying that, you know, we got to have the bandwidth. We got to have the bandwidth to support the Internet of Things, and you know, with the end of net neutrality, we'll just they're going to create it's going to be internet infrastructure all over the place. And yeah, I'm not saying that there's no purpose to it. I mean, sure, a security system makes sense. But every blessed thing under the sun connects to the internet now. And frankly, if you see the ads for Alexa, Michael mentions Alexa. Alexa, have the Roomba begin vacuuming the floor. Maybe Michael, it's you and it's the age difference between you and me. But there really was something creepy about the HAL 9000 in 2001. And by the way, for those who don't know, just a reminder, HAL, H-A-L, is HAL, because they couldn't get away with calling it what they wanted to, which is IBM. So instead they used the three letters that came in front of those letters, H instead of I, A instead of B, L instead of M. I'm sorry, Dave. You're out of coffee pods. Yep. Yes, that was. That was our obligatory Star Trek reference, Steve. Transparent aluminum. Meanwhile, Steve points out, one of my business partners is from South Korea. I recall him telling me the standard interweb tubes is 100 down and 50 up. Meanwhile, Alma says, night comes to the Cumberlands. I mentioned I read that book because of you. It was incredibly painful. I will happily forward my copy to you to mail it to anyone who's unable to buy it. I want to help in that way, if you're willing. I so appreciate that book. No one is able to ever understand that area unless they read it. It really is. It's a primer for understanding. And you know what? You can hand that book to people who were born and raised here, and they read it and they go, damn. And they start doing the same things that I was doing, going, oh, yeah, I recognize that. Yep, it was like that. Mm-hmm. I remember those stories. Meanwhile, a note coming from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. On your feet or on your knees, people are things too, or so saith the moneyed who rule us. Ah, yes. Well, look, I mean, that's what all that data gathering is for. Now, if you want to just run off, really run off down the rabbit hole. Oh, by the way, Robert in Australia just said, I just tested my speed, 3.42 Mbps download, 0.63 upload. It does vary from time to time. Interesting fact, those homes that got the original Labor FTTP NBN before the Liberals changed it, now use that as a selling point for the house. Hey, we've got real internet over. Ah, we've got some lovely internet. Comes with the house, too. All right. Steve on the Gulf Coast also adds, say goodbye to virtual education, too. It's as slow as it is because it's allowed to be. It was slow before because you maybe didn't fork over enough dough. Now it's both. Americans don't travel overseas enough to realize just how fast and cheap the net can be. I've had a laptop overheat in China because it couldn't handle about 100 gazillion bits per second. Price? About 10 bucks a month. Fast is pretty much the global standard. Here, we're drowning in bandwidth for all that. Asking why you aren't getting enough is kind of like asking how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. But now, getting shitty service is built into the regulatory equation, too, and not just the luck of the draw for a lousy provider. As for competition in the marketplace, what a quaint notion. Kind of like mail delivery twice a day or decent public education. Oh, yeah, that I wasn't thinking about virtual education. Man, they will reap a humongous windfall if you're trying to deliver. Oh, they will absolutely they will skin educational institutions for trying to do an electronic classroom. Yeah, that looks like a mess. Don with a note. Thank you, Don. That looks fun. And, yeah, Randy says, not when my toaster gets a virus. And that's the, and that's another ad that's out there now. You can order the Norton Cube wireless router that will make sure that nothing, supposedly make sure that nothing nasty gets in and has its way with your Roomba. Oh, note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. God damn it, Bob, stop telling us how to use the electric internet. It's not a big truck, you know. No, it's a series of tubes. Exactly. Yeah. Regarding ISP choice, Asa points out, here are some very interesting stats about ISPs in Texas, for example, which technically has the most number of ISPs of any state. In total, there are 438 internet service providers in Texas. There are 3.3 million people in Texas without access to a wired connection capable of 25 Mbps download speeds. 3.3 million. There are 3.9 million people in Texas that have access to only one wired provider, leaving them no options to switch. Another 1.5 million people in Texas don't have any wired internet providers available where they live. That's pretty profound. And I'll bet you if you started doing some sort of, you know, liberal, progressive demographic analysis, what would you find then about who wasn't getting the service? Right. So, I guess from there, it's wait and see. But here's the fun part. When the waiting's when the waiting part is over and the C part begins, there's not much you can do about it. In the interim, there's also the suing the bastards part. The bastards being Ajit Pai and his cronies. Like I said, the vote was 3-2. Three Republicans voting against two Democrats. Goddamn DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Hillary, Bernie would have won. Eric Schneiderman, who is the Attorney General of New York, and I'm sure is sorely lacking in ideological purity, is nonetheless suing Ajit Pai to try to stop this stupidity. And best hope that he succeeds. Eric Schneiderman's office was the one that I think first identified the 2 million phonied up, faked up, frauded up, ginned up, rubed up, fake comments in the EPA public comments regarding this issue, which the EPA, of course, summarily ignored. And you know, that's another aspect of government. In the administrative state, there are laws that require the input of the public. I've seen it too many times to count, for instance, in mountaintop removal permits. There will be a public comment period before the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection can issue a permit to, you know, blow up another hunk of Appalachia and ruin it for the next, you know, 100,000 years at least. And the public comments will come rolling in over the comment period, and they will be, almost to a person, without fail, opposed to the permit. It's as close to voting on something like that as we can get in this area. And then maybe they'll hold a hearing in a high school gymnasium. And all but two or three people will stand up and say, we don't want this in our community. And then they go back and they say, well, they didn't think we were actually going to listen to them, did they? You're kidding, right? And then they just do what they intended to do all along, and the public and their comments be damned. It's enough to make a bit of a cynic out of you. Well, you know, the public says that, but they don't know what they're talking about. No. Meanwhile, there, Jack mentioned the issue of data collection a little bit ago. And I've had this, and this goes back to my favorite relatively modern science fiction novel, Altered Carbon. You know, the premise of that is that the technology reaches a point where a person's personality, entire being, memories, everything, can be digitized inside what the author referred to as a cortical stack. And so death becomes kind of meaningless as long as your stack can be retrieved and you can be re-sleeved into another body. By the way, Thank you to Ron and Raleigh for sending along the series version of Altered Carbon will premiere on Netflix on February 2nd, 2018. I am eagerly awaiting. Okay, not eagerly. I'm awaiting with some trepidation because I love the book so much. I'm kind of curious to see how they'll manage to screw it up. But ever since reading that, I've been having, you know, sort of distantly followed concepts of artificial intelligence and things like that, and having read Philip K. Dick from way back when I was, just 13, 14 years old, I began to think about and wonder about all this data collection. And looking at things like social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, what have you. Ferg showed me a cloud picture the other day of the words that he uses most on Facebook. And I don't even know if I can fully flesh this out. I've got to, you know, if this goes far enough, you'll eventually come up with a sort of digitized portrait of a human personality. It won't be 100% accurate because we all censor ourselves, well, at least some of us do, to one degree or another on social media. That's one of those things that Agnes and I always struggled with our own kids. When social media came along and they got on, it was, listen, everything you think does not have to go on to social media. But there's a shitload of people for whom that's the case. You know, I just tied my shoe. Or Instagramming a photograph or a little bit of video of them tying their shoe. We haven't quite gotten to live streaming video of people. Wait a minute, I'm going to say this, and then somebody's going to send it to me. So I do it at my own hazard. We haven't quite gotten to the point where people are live streaming their trips to the restroom, but they kind of already are. Yeah. And eventually we will, we'll kind of create a human consciousness composite by virtue of what we put on social media. I know this is really, really getting out there, but I'm just throwing out some ideas for consideration. Yeah, Earther pointing out, see, there's no difference between the two parties. 3-2 vote. Got it. Yeah, got it, got it, got it. See, it's evenings like this. You're going to be glad. You'd be glad if you had a big 3-month supply of miraculous mistletoe, only from Horn Nutraceuticals. So I've managed to filibobster away the first half of the program, and I've got some updating to do. And some big thoughts, some big thanks. So, Marsha followed after Keith and Silent R. Lamar, and we have wiped out both Ralph's and Chris's challenges. And Marsha took us a little further into bringing down the rest of it. We've got $210 to go in fundraising to wipe out the deficit. $210 to go. 10 at 21, 21 at 10, 1 at 210, 2 at 105, 4 at 5250,
26 1/4 at 8. All of that. But thank you, Marcia. Thank you very, very kindly for getting us that far along the way. $210 to go to finish off fundraising for the evening. Michael in Madison says, no, I agree. I've seen 2001 dozens of times. One of my favorite films, HAL 9000, is creepy. I don't have an internet-connected Roomba, or a Roomba for that matter, or an Alexa, and I don't talk to Siri all that often, except in the car to play music, get directions, or call someone. Maybe someday. But right now, my smart home is limited to security, smoke, carbon monoxide detector, lights, and thermostat, and I don't yet have any voice activation set up for any of it. And that's all reasonable usage. I don't have an Alexa yet. I would feel kind of guilty if I did, I think. Some of this is demographically related to age, I suspect. Siri came along. I tried to use it a couple of times. It struck me as being somewhere about as useful as teats on a boar hog or a screen door on a submarine. Or a steering wheel on a bull, and I gave up. The greatest interaction I have with Siri at this point in time is turning it off when it persistently tries to turn itself on. Although if I was a real big time radio program host, I would probably. Interrogate Alexa on the air like that hard-hitting broadcast journalist Alex Jones did the other night. Even after I played it on the program the other night, I've gone back and played it again a few times. God, that was funny. Okay, I won't. Marty says, don't ask Siri the burning question, what is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? African or European? Okay, I won't do that. Although, now I probably sort of have to. I'm glad to know that I'm not alone in this. Under the subject line, Idiotica Exotica, Steve on the Gulf Coast says, we may be creating a subhuman composite of consciousness right now. I mean, if you're listening to your refrigerator in traffic, well, and then that whole Darwinian thing kicks in. And, well, you know, Darwin, that's so old-fashioned, evolution. So, anyway, we're more than halfway through the program, and we'll take a break and see if anybody wants to jump into the conversation. You are more than welcome, if you so desire. But how, Bob? How, you ask, do I take part in the conversation? You know this, of course. You call 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or from anywhere else on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Either one of those will get you quickly into the mix of the program. You'll be participating in conversation radio, and we will have just a Jim Dandy high old time. Okie doke. And there's other stuff to get into this evening that we can talk about if you just want to, if you're in the mood for a 3-hour filibobster, because we're an hour and 40 minutes of the way there. Scott and Punky pointing out Internet of Things, old school. When things get just too goddamn wired around here, it's good to know that my Siri is hooked up to my clapper. Clap on. That's good. Wait a minute. Yeah. Scott and Punky get a cowbell for that. It is Thursday, of course, and that means that we have the Green News Report courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Always look forward to that. I do. I do. And then again, also, you know, your calls, if you're up for that kind of thing. And it's just a matter of finding the appropriate bumper now. I don't know, just kind of, Nah. Yeah, why not? All right, let's take a break and come back and see which way the program's going to go. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Thanks for jumping in and helping so far, y'all. That really does take a load off my mind. And we'll see what comes after. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'll get over you soon. It's Thursday, December 14, 2017.
We've found thousands of farm workers out in the fields of Ventura County without the protective masks that they need.
Officials warn of toxic smoke from Southern California wildfires.
The Arctic as a whole is warming at least twice as fast as the rest of the planet.
New bad news for the melting Arctic. At Global Summit, the world fights climate change without the U.S. Plus...
Please... Come to France.
French president makes good on promise to fund U.S. climate scientists.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Cole, the science is in, and it's cold.
And that's all it is. And this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it is damn near Christmas, and we are still fighting wildfires out here in Southern California.
Winter wildfires, which is really weird. But yes, the wildfires still rage in Southern California, and now state officials are warning of hazardous air quality in some areas, telling residents to stay inside to avoid exposure to toxic smoke and carcinogenic ash from incinerated homes. But labor activists warn that thousands of farm workers are still working outside in the dangerous smoke and have not received protective equipment from their employers. That's according to Lucas Zucker of the Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy in an interview with Democracy Now.
We've found thousands of farm workers out in the fields of Ventura County without the protective masks that they need. You know, workers are really faced with this horrific choice of either giving up the income they desperately need in a time like this or be out in conditions that are endangering their health and safety.
And for people who don't know the area out here in Southern California, there are farms, orchards, a vast agricultural area. They call this part of Southern California the salad bowl because it produces so much of the food for the rest of the country. And I can only imagine what it's like out there working in those fields right next to these fires, which are hundreds of miles wide.
Disturbing news for the Arctic. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reports that this year clocked in as the second warmest year on record for the Arctic, with the smallest extent of sea ice ever on record. NOAA Arctic Director Jeremy Mathis warned that the rate and magnitude of sea ice loss since 2000 is unprecedented in at least 1,500 years. Studies have increasingly linked the melting Arctic to changing weather patterns and extreme weather events in the Northern Hemisphere. At the One Planet Summit in Paris this week,
we're in the process of losing the battle.
French President Emmanuel Macron called on European leaders and corporations to pick up the pace of action in cutting emissions that cause dangerous global warming. Macron also made good on an earlier promise, announcing multi-million dollar grants to 13 U.S. climate scientists to conduct their research in France. After U.S. President Donald Trump, who was not invited to the conference, vowed he would withdraw the U.S. from the historic U.N. Paris Climate Agreement in 2020.
So we're not funding these scientists anymore. France has to step in and fund U.S. climate science.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
But American political and business leaders were also there in Paris to organize and to help developing countries prepare for climate impacts. Former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger offered some blunt reassurance.
It doesn't matter that Donald Trump backed out of the Paris Agreement, because the private sector didn't drop out, the public sector didn't drop out, universities didn't drop out, scientists didn't drop out, engineers didn't drop out, no one dropped out. Donald Trump pulled Donald Trump out of the Paris Agreement.
Among several major announcements at the summit, the World Bank and global insurer AXA said they will end all financing for oil and gas exploration starting in 2019. Major investors launched a campaign to pressure the world's top 100 greenhouse gas emitting corporations to reduce their emissions. And China's environment minister announced China is on the cusp of launching its nationwide carbon emissions trading market, which would be the largest in the world. Finally, the U.S. private sector is stepping up its investment in clean energy technology at home. Tesla Motors' new all-electric semi-truck was unveiled just last month, but it's already pulling in hundreds of pre-orders from major corporations. The latest from beverage giant Pepsi, which this week ordered 100 Tesla all-electric semis, citing its lower overall cost compared to conventional internal combustion semis.
Give it up, Desi Doyen. Elon Musk is not going to give you a free Model 3.
Oh, come on.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters, even in France, at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, yeah. Nice bumper. Good call, Brad and Desi. Elon Musk is not going to give Desi a Tesla Model 3. But, see, if we had a marketing department here at the Horn, which we don't, except for, you know, the hardworking peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, which doesn't really exist. Well, we could make a compelling case for people need to see a Tesla on the road in Appalachia, in the heart of coal country. And I'm the guy they need to see driving the Tesla on the road in the heart of coal country in Appalachia. Yeah, see? Yeah, good. But, you know, we don't have a marketing department, so, oh well. I was not going to let today go by without mention of a grim anniversary. This is the anniversary of Sandy Hook, and it is Sandy Hook is one of those seminal moments in modern American history in which we learned a great deal about ourselves. We learned about ourselves that in the aftermath of the slaughter of 20 little school children, 6 teachers, 1 doomsday prepper mama, and the suicide of the shooter, we were appropriately horrified and disgusted and grief-stricken. But we learned that the two-legged monsters of the most powerful, wealthiest domestic terror organization in the United States, and of course I'm talking about the National Rifle Association, they weren't. And we have learned that repeatedly since, because such efforts as were made in the aftermath of what Adam Lanza did at Sandy Hook were vetoed by the National Rifle Association. And that's another thing we learned. That one powerful, wealthy, domestic terror organization holds a veto power over the rights of we the people trying to make that more perfect union to take corrective action in the face of obvious wrong. We also learned the depths of depravity to which some in this country are willing to sink
We learned it from people like Alex Jones and the host of Two-Legged Monsters, who to this day torment the grieving families of the children who were slaughtered 5 years ago. Shortly, or somewhat after, the shooting itself, the massacre itself. Well, initially there were a lot of questions, you know, who was Adam Lanza, who was Mother Lanza? He killed Mother Lanza first. And she was a doomsday prepper, and there were guns all over the place. Arguably, Adam was not okay. And so he took her down first. And then went and murdered 20 children and 6 adult school personnel. But somewhat after things calmed down a little bit, in an effort to try to understand Adam Lanza, well, somebody turned up some audio. And I have it here, and I'm going to share it with you. I don't think that it is particularly triggerish. James with an email. Come on, Bob. There was no Adam Lanza. Fictional character. Crisis actors. And as a result of what happened, and I guess you can say that some of the genesis of this lies in the attacks of September the 11th, 2001. You know, those weren't real people falling to their deaths from the collapsing ruins of the World Trade Center. No. And, you know, the whole business about how Building 7 committed suicide or something like that. Some of it, you know, may go far, as far, you know, some of the willingness to go down that road may go as far back as the Kennedy assassination. And it's one of the lack of governmental transparency in the wake of the Kennedy assassination created a culture that felt like it probably would never be told the full truth about anything. September 11th, 2001 only made it worse. But particularly after Sandy Hook, and we've seen it, for instance, in the aftermath of Las Vegas, that really didn't happen the way it appeared to happen. It was particularly with the events of September 11th, 2001, that the phrase false flag entered our lexicon. It wasn't the first time, but that's when it went mainstream. False flag, false flag. But back in 2011, about a year before Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza, giving himself a pseudonym of Greg, called in to a radio show, I think hosted out of Oregon. The name of the radio show was Anarchy Radio. And I don't know what they talked about, but Adam was a big fan. And I have here the audio of Adam Lanza's call to Anarchy Radio in 2011. This is not a joke. This isn't a spoof. The voice has been identified as that of Adam Lanza. And what I would ask you to listen. And for instance, I don't know if she's out there tonight, but for we got friends up in that area. Darlene, if you're listening this evening, I'd like to know, when you hear his, does he just sound like some everyday kid from Connecticut, or does he sound like somebody who's not all right? You'll probably understand what I'm getting at after you. The audio is about 7.5 minutes long. Oh, God, I'm sorry, Kelly. Subject line, Sandy Hook. Kelly says, Bob, I was blown away this week when a co-worker of mine, who I thought was pretty smart, said it didn't happen. In my head, I was thinking, you are what's wrong with this country. Yeah, and, you know, those moments, and you look up and you go, whoa, I thought I knew you. And then forevermore, you wonder, hey, is that person safe to, you know? Mm-hmm. And even the comments, and they're old, even the comments on the audio, autism does not equal mental retardation, and yes, this really happened. Stop with the stupid fucking conspiracy bullshit, because a year prior to that, someone said, he sure speaks and comprehends pretty well for supposedly having autism. How does this guy get off all those shots within just a few minutes? Someone without weapons training could not shoot this accurately over a short amount of time, much less some little 90-pounder with autism. Really wondering if this really happened or just a government hoax for gun control. So I'm just going to roll this audio, then maybe we'll talk about it after if you want to. Or I'll talk about it. Somebody can talk about it.
There we go. Hello. We get the collapsible headphones here, but we're back.
Sorry, we got Greg on the phone.
Oh, Greg. Okay. How's it going?
Oh, hi, good. I'm a fan of your writing.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to put up such an old news story, but I couldn't find anything that you said about the topic, and it seems relevant to your interest, so I thought I'd bring up Travis the Chimp. Do you remember him?
I don't.
Well, he was a highly domesticated chimpanzee who lived in a suburban home in Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And he was raised just like a human child, starting from the week he was born. By the time that he was 14 years old, which would be somewhere around age 20 in human years.
Uh-huh.
He slept in a bed, he took his own baths, he dressed himself, he brushed his teeth with an electric toothbrush.
Really? When was this?
Well, this happened in early 2009.
Oh.
Just a quick observation. Ha ha! Did you hear the ha ha about him, the chimp brushing his teeth with an electric toothbrush? Ha ha! If Anarchy Dude here could have known that he was talking to somebody that was going to blow away 20 little children a year later. Well, never mind.
Huh?
He ate his meals at a table and enjoyed human foods like ice cream. And he used a remote control to watch television and liked baseball games. And he even used a computer to look at pictures on the internet.
Huh.
And it goes without saying that Travis was very overweight. He was 200 pounds when he should have been around the low hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually taking Xanax.
Amazing.
I couldn't find any information about why he was taking it, but it just seems to say a lot that he was given it at all. And basically, I think Travis wasn't really any different than a mentally handicapped human child.
Hmm.
But anyway, one day in February 2009... he was acting very agitated, and at some point grabbed his owner's car keys, went outside, and started beeping from car to car, apparently wanting to go for a car ride. And he was acting very aggressively, so his owner called.
just like a human child, remember? Bear that in mind. And I think he was on Xanax, and he was just like a human child.
Her friend over to get her to help him to calm down and go back inside. And once she arrived, he immediately attacked her, and his owner tried to stop him, but couldn't, and she even resorted to stabbing him with a knife, but no.
And bear in mind what he's describing there is a situation, because I looked it up, in which the chimp more or less tore the face off the woman he's describing.
Thing worked, and she said that after she stabbed him, he looked at her as if to say, "Why'd you do that to me, Mom?" Because apparently that was what their relationship was like, no different than between a human mother and a human child. So after the stabbing, she called the police, who arrived 12 minutes after the attack, at which point her friend was pretty close to dead. And once the cruiser came up, Travis went over to it, tried to open the locked passenger door. He smashed off the side view mirror, went over to the driver's door, opened it, and the cop shot him. He fled back into the house, where he went to his playroom and bled to death. And this might not seem very relevant, but I'm bringing it up because afterward, everyone was condemning his owner for saying how irresponsible she was for raising a chimp like it was a child, and that she should have known something like this would happen because chimps aren't supposed to be living in civilization. They're supposed to be living in the wild among each other. But their criticism stops there, and the implication is that there's no way anything could have gone wrong in his life if he had been living in civilization as a human rather than a chimp.
Indeed.
Is in Travis, because he brings up questions about this whole process of child raising.
You see where this is going? Now, this is just a little less than exactly a year before he rampages and murders 27 people and then kills himself. He seems fixated on the raised as a human child thing.
Yeah. Isn't something which just happens to gently exist without us having to do anything, because every newborn child, human child, is born in a chimp-like state, and civilization is only sustained by conditioning them for years on end so that they'll accept it for what it is. And since we've gone through this conditioning, we can observe a human family raising a human child, and I'm sure that even you have trouble intuitively seeing it as something unnatural. But when we see a chimp in that position, we visually know that there's something profoundly wrong with the situation.
So, Adam Lanza's thesis here, and remember, he's saying this to a pro-anarchy radio program, is that civilization itself is a problem. And that children are only, they only act civilized because of conditioning. He's obviously intelligent. Probably, I would guess, with a scary high IQ. But something isn't firing right. That's probably the wrong term. There's some process that's gone sideways, and of course, it might be a bit of a stretch here, but as we have seen in the case of any number of right-wing hate broadcasters, people can be weaponized by what they hear. You know, as somebody who does the liberal progressive side of the street, I'm not sitting here. I make a point of not sitting here saying that, you know, because there are people who say, you know, dude, you know, if we just make it all collapse, like, you know, we can have like we could deindustrialize the world. And like, we could... Oh, Jesus, I can't even. It's one thing to talk about our own anthropology. It is another to egg people on to actions that I would argue are reasonably foreseeable. Now, I didn't have enough time to do the research and find out what sort of writings, and this guy's name is John Zerzan, Zerzan. I don't even know if he's still broadcasting. I have no reason to believe that this audio is anything but genuine. But to simply say that Adam Lanza weaponized himself is wrong. Six days short of a year before he would murder 27 people and then kill himself, he gave us a pretty good idea. Of what had been done to his mind. We continue.
And it's easy to say there's something wrong with it simply because it's a chimp, but what's the real difference between us and our closest relatives? Travis wasn't an untamed monster at all. He wasn't just feigning domestication, he was civilized. He was able to integrate into society. He was a chimp actor when he was younger, and his owner drove him around the city frequently in association with her towing business, where he met many different people and got along with everyone. If Travis had been some nasty monster all his life, it would have been widely reported, but to the contrary, it seems like everyone who knew him said how shocked they were that Travis had been so savage.
And that part of it has to do with chimpanzee physiology. After this and a couple of other episodes with chimps, efforts were made to educate people because, well, I mean, gosh, you know, Tarzan has a chimp for a sidekick, right? That's a little bit old school, but they're not humans. And at puberty and beyond, because chimpanzees go through puberty too, at puberty and beyond, male chimpanzees become extremely aggressive, violent, and he wasn't civilized. Hey, it's synchronicity, Scott. Scott in San Diego and Punky. It's amazing you'd share this audio today. Just last night I watched a 1971 YouTube video of Ronald Reagan being interviewed by Dick Cavett. As you might expect, the topic of his 1951 film Bedtime for Bonzo came up. Reagan, then the governor of California, explained that the premise of the film, a chimp being raised like a human child, was entirely plausible and was partially based on studies at the time at Duke, I think, along those very lines. Later, Reagan chided the notion of the film's sequel, Bonzo Goes to College, explaining that it was too far-fetched. We have a fascination with the primate world. And we are related to, not descended from, and see, that's one of those problems that attaches to people like Roy Moore who reject evolution. Well, I didn't come from no chimp. You know, in the case of Roy Moore, you look at it and you go, yeah, prove it. We have a distant common ancestor. just as we know, for instance, with language groups, that there is a distant common ancestor language. English is part of the Indo-European overall language group. That means that languages all the way from India into Europe share linguistic elements. And they come from a common source, a first language, that, like everything else, evolves. And some ancient common ancestor hominid, I guess, maybe before hominids, splits off, branches off, some of them become us. One of the branches becomes chimps, another branch becomes gorillas. But we make profound mistakes in anthropomorphizing inside the animal world. And somehow or another, as Adam Lanza notes in this, the story itself was kind of old even when he was calling the program on December the 20th, 2011. Travis the Chimp had been in show business. But that was when he was a chimp infant. The story itself had occurred in February 2009. The incident happened on February 16th, 2009, when he was shot and killed. And he was adorable in his infancy. But puberty does things to male chimpanzees, and they're aggressive in the wild. That's one of those things that makes chimpanzees and bonobos so different. But what grabs me and what I find chilling about this audio is the degree to which it seems clear that Adam Lanza identifies with the chimpanzee. Perhaps because he felt he was being conditioned. Perhaps because of the degree that he had what has been described as a turbulent relationship at home with his mother. His mother and his father got divorced. And apparently it was not a pleasant one. He was 20 years old. And had no criminal record. Mother Lanza owned at least a dozen firearms, and he had all the access to them he could want. And Mother Lanza never manifested any fear of Adam. She kept the guns out where they were easily accessed. He had begun college, Western Connecticut State University. But it was noted that he had presented with developmental challenges before he was even 3 years old. Communication, sensory difficulties, socialization delays, repetitive behaviors. He was initially diagnosed with sensory integration disorder. And that is a symptom, said to be a symptom, of conditions on the autism spectrum. He went to homebound status in educationally in eighth grade because there was a determination that he was too disabled even with supports and accommodations to attend school. They tried to medicate him with Celexa for 3 days and then stopped because of an adverse reaction. The Office of the Child Advocate said that in the course of Lanza's entire life, minimal mental health evaluation and treatment in relation to his apparent need was obtained. Of the couple of providers that saw him, only one, the Yale Child Study Center, seemed to appreciate the gravity of his presentation, his need for extensive mental health and special education supports, and the critical need for medication to ease his obsessive-compulsive symptoms. He was fascinated with mass shootings. None of this, none of the stuff, his clippings collection, clippings about people who shot at school children as far back as the 19th century, saved videos on his computer of gunshot suicides. None of this was ever known about because he was allowed to keep his bedroom locked and his mother never went in there. The report of the Child Advocate said, in the wake of Mrs. Lanza's stated plan to move out of Sandy Hook in 2012, and perhaps stimulated by fears of leaving the comfort zone of his home, Adam planned and executed the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14, 2012. His severe and deteriorating internalized mental health problems were combined with an atypical preoccupation with violence, combined with access to deadly weapons. This proved a recipe for mass murder. Back to the audio. Oh, by the way, Alma pointing out, Travis was an abused chimp, especially when put on any drug. This has always been disgraceful. Do you think the kid had disdain for humans that treat primates in such a manner? No, I don't think he was upset about how Travis was being treated. It seems to me like he saw in Travis a kindred spirit. That's the best I can figure.
They knew him as a sweet child. And there were two isolated incidents early in his life when he acted aggressively, but summarizing them would take too long, so basically I'll just say that he didn't act really any differently than a human child would, and the people who would use that as an indictment against having chimps live as humans do wouldn't apply the same thing to humans, so it's just kind of irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
But look what civilization did to him. It had the same exact effect on him as it has on humans. He was profoundly sick in every sense of the term, and he had to resort to these surrogate activities like watching baseball and looking at pictures on a computer screen and taking Xanax. He was a complete mess.
Mm-hmm.
And his attack wasn't simply because he was a senselessly violent, impulsive chimp, which was how his behavior was universally portrayed. Immediately before his attack, he had desperately been wanting his owner to drive him somewhere. And the best reason I can think of for why he would want that, looking at his entire life, would be that some little thing he experienced was the last straw, and he was overwhelmed by the life that he had, and he wanted to get out of it by changing his environment, and the best way that he knew how to deal with that was by getting his owner to drive him somewhere else.
Yeah.
And when his owner's friend arrived, he knew that she was trying to coax him back into his life of domestication, and he couldn't handle that, so he attacked her and anyone else who approached him. And dismissing his attack as simply being the senseless, violent impulsiveness of a chimp instead of a human is wishful thinking at best.
Mm-hmm.
His attack can be seen entirely parallel to the attacks and random acts of violence that you bring up on your show every week. Committed by humans, which the mainstream also has no explanation for.
And no.
Actual human, I just don't think it would be such a stretch to say that he very well could have been a teenage mall shooter or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
did that just make the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck? It's a 7 minute and 34 second clip, and 6 minutes and 50 seconds in, he posits that there's not much difference between Travis the Chimp and a teenage mall shooter. At this point, he's, like I said, it's December 20th, 2011. And there are points in what he says in his conversation where it's hard not to reach the conclusion that he already knew, at least in the broadest general terms, what he would eventually do.
Wow. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah.
That's quite a story. Yeah, that's really apropos, isn't it? Travis the Chimp.
It's just that I'm a little surprised that I never heard you bring it up at all, because maybe I'm just seeing connections where there aren't any, but...
I think not. No, I didn't catch that one. I didn't, maybe I was out of the country or something, I don't know, but I missed it. Thanks very much, man.
Thank you.
Take care. Wow, very well articulated, I think. Okay, well, I guess we better move on.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess we better move on. Yes, you've articulated it very well. Now, we have no way of knowing what this John Zarzan thought when it came to light that, you know, that's the guy who did Sandy Hook. But the speech, the pressured, or it sounds to me like pressured speech, the clipped staccato quality, I don't know what it sounds like every day just walking up and down the streets in Connecticut. Does he just sound like any other 20-year-old kid in Connecticut? 19-year-old kid?
because he sounds kind of fixated. He's calling a radio program, and he tells us that he's deeply researched the writings of John Zarzan, and he couldn't find where Zarzan had written anything about Travis the Chimp. And he's surprised that, given the content of that radio program, that John Zarzan hasn't talked about Travis the Chimp. And so, on a radio program 5 days before Christmas in 2011, he calls in to talk about something that happened in February of 2009. That seems a little obsessive. So we can probably say that he had developmental difficulties. There's a raging debate about as to whether or not autism falls into the category of a mental illness. And I certainly don't have the expertise to address that question. But the takeaway for me is that even listening to this audio and knowing what his history and background had been, apparently, and see, you can't do that. I mean, you really can't do this in America because of the National Rifle Association. You can't have healthcare professionals look at Mother and say, "Mother Lanza, you wouldn't happen to have a fucking house full of guns, would you, Mother Lanza? Would you now?" Healthcare professionals can't even do that, because then the most powerful, wealthiest domestic terror organization in the United States weaponizes its members of Congress to attack any healthcare governing body that suggests that's the sort of question that should be asked as a matter of assessing household risks. That's a real thing. I think it was it the AMA? No, I think it was the American Academy of Pediatrics that said that risks, in the course of assessing risks in a household, it is appropriate to say, "Do you have guns in your house?" Because the presence of a firearm in a house has a direct correlation to the likelihood of violence in that house. But no one could ask that question of Mother Lanza. And Mother Lanza would probably have been incensed at that question. But the bottom line is that absent the ease of access, not just to firearms, but to incredibly effective, rapid firing, you know, squeeze the trigger, another bullet comes out, and there's lots of bullets. Military-style firearms, he can't kill 27 people and then kill himself. And that fact remains to this day. And it remains strictly and exclusively because of the National Rifle Association. Hey, you know, that's possible, James. James says maybe you're reading in because you know the future. Just saying. Sure. But there's also a past to know. There was a complete report that was written, that was prepared. And it said the ease of access to firearms was the final piece of the puzzle that made Sandy Hook happen. Had he gone in with a ball bat, he would have been overpowered. Had he gone in with a knife, he would have done some damage, but not near what he did. Had he gone in with a six-shooter, he would have killed some, but not 28. Or 27 plus himself. Had he gone in with a pair of Glocks, he would have been hard-pressed to do what he did. Yeah, Arthur, listening to the audio, got the same sense I did. What? You're going to kill everybody? Okay, that's an interesting point. Very, very eloquent. Yeah, I guess I missed the Travis the Chimp story because maybe I was out of the country or something. Jesus. Well, I don't know about you, but listening to that audio, again, because listening to that and putting in, we know the future, maybe that's why I found it so chilling. But it was 5 years ago today. And the takeaway is that not a goddamn thing has changed. In fact, you can argue that it has gotten worse. So we got 24 minutes to go in the program. And, yeah, we've still got $245 to go. No, I'm sorry, $210. $210 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thanks to everybody who stepped up and met the challenges. That was such a help. Thank you so very much. We wouldn't have had any chance at all come tomorrow evening to get caught up if we could in the next few minutes knock down. And, you know, the overnight crew will probably knock it down some, but they won't knock it down $210. So thanks to all of you already, and hopefully we'll take it down a little bit more in the interim. Let's check in somewhere out on the highways and byways of America the Beautiful and see what's going on in John's world. Hey, John.
America, that's you. What'd you say?
I say what?
Say what? America? What?
Yeah, America the America. Yeah.
Yeah, I had stepped away for a few minutes, and I was feeling a little bad because I'd called for something to talk about kind of continue on the earlier conversation, but I do want to add a 2 cents on what you were just talking about.
Go right ahead.
And this kind of falls back into like what Dr. Bill is talking about and what have you. You know, this country has such a fetish for its Revolutionary War, the brave fighting of, you know, for freedom and all this stuff, that whole blessed mythology that's been tossed out there. When, you know, if you really look at it, that was, most of that was just a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and it all feeds right into that whole gun culture, you know, especially on the right wing. You know, it's, you know, got to have our guns to fight off the tyrannical government when the revolution comes. And, you know, it's that entire mythology that sits there. You know, it's not just the NRA, it's the whole culture of a good subset of the country that's still sold to the idea that, oh, yeah, we fight for freedom, and it's freedom this and freedom fries and freedom internet and freedom, and the word freedom is tossed around so freaking much.
And you know what? You know what, John, I'm not trying to divert you, but
no.
The jumping off point from the American Revolution, what's particularly fascinating. And I just feel, I love the works of Barbara Tuchman, whether it's A Distant Mirror or The Guns of August or Bible and Sword. Well, I just got done reading another one called The March of Folly, and it starts out at Troy, okay, and goes up to America's involvement in Vietnam. Pretty broad. That's a pretty broad scope, if you ask me. But its thesis is that in each of the scenarios that she examines, she can point to folly, as she defines it, as being the determining factor in some disastrous event. And one of the time periods she covers is pre and during Revolutionary America. But she doesn't care much of anything for what's going on in the colonies. It's all about the monumental screw-ups that took place in British government. And,
oh, yeah.
And by the time you're done reading it, you realize that everything that we're taught about the American Revolution is something that happened only because the people in Britain were in British government were a bunch of amateurs, self-dealing fools, drunks, hedonists, jackasses, and idiots.
Yep.
And every step of the way, there was an opportunity to step back and have the colonies remain quite happily subjects of the British Crown. And every step of the way, they took the wrong fork in the road.
Oh, yeah.
And moving forward, what you're talking, I think where you're going is a further examination of the folly of the hagiography that attaches to our own revolution. Because it barely took a generation before Adams and Jefferson, old and near death, had come to the realization that whatever they thought the revolution was going to be, it was over.
Oh yeah, it was done. You know, the fancy language and the high flowery words and the aspirations that they put in place have been basically, and I'll use the term loosely, have been interpreted almost to non-existence. You know, if you take and have any understanding of quote-unquote the English language at the time that the documents were written, they were fairly clear-cut. They weren't...
You have listened. You have been paying attention to Dr. Bill.
Unfortunately, I haven't not. But I haven't listened to him in a while because, you know, it's like I'm kind of.
No, but you got the message a while back.
Yeah, and it's you know, the areas that they were vague deliberately. They understood what they were doing, but then you fast forward a couple of generations and get those, as you call them, pettifoggering lawyers into it. And they will interpret the hell out of things to the point where they can literally turn it on its head and take it right back to the direction opposite of what was intended.
Right, and the classic case in that, to go back to Dr. Bill, is the use of the phrase, or as it appears on the printed page, pursuit of happiness. That had a very specific and commonly understood meaning in 1776. And it did not mean whoever dies with the most toys wins, or that material wealth is the equal of happiness. They had philosophers on whose work they drew, who had actually used the phrase pursuit of property. And Jefferson deliberately did not use that phrase, instead using pursuit of happiness as a marker, as an indicator that what they were aiming for was a non-dysfunctional community.
Yeah.
And of course, you have to take this all in stride alongside the fact that half the country was actively engaged in owning, you know, hereditary bond chattel slavery. And there was no concern with happiness there or the building of community there. And frankly, the happy community they were going to have was going to be a happy community, the barometer for which was the functionality of the community of white propertied men.
Yep. I mean, the ink wasn't even dry on the stuff before they started, you know, nipping a little piece here, a little piece there. I mean, well,
that's another thing that Dr. Bill brings up, is that by 1860, the Declaration of Independence is barely ever even referenced. It has become almost a forgotten document. And this is, you know, this is all documentable. This isn't Dr. Bill's opinion. It's historically factual. And Abraham Lincoln, autodidact that he was, with the limited schooling that he had, out on the far-flung frontier, reads the Declaration of Independence, is moved to damn near religious fervor, and he is, for all intents and purposes, solely responsible for the rejuvenation and the reinvigoration of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, he was very much a part of that, but you can't escape the fact that he also set some of the foundations for the problems we got now with the massive overreach of government driven by the Civil War. You know, the whole, you know, eliminating things like habeas corpus and stuff like that during the war.
No, hold on. He did not eliminate habeas corpus. The Constitution's language with regard to habeas corpus, John, has an exception written into it.
Well,
Lincoln was a shrewd lawyer who took advantage of the language that already existed in the Constitution.
Oh, I understand that, but you get where I'm going to. You know, you start the minute you start really getting down to splitting hairs to do this stuff, and the whole concept of the law, as I understand it anyway, is very heavily built on things like precedent. And if you can get away with taking the first foot, then the next time you go into court, you can maybe argue for the second foot.
Well, it's based on precedent, but the entirety of the history of not just American but Anglo-American common law is that it is designed to change with the times. Even concepts such as the law versus equity. Equity arises because of the rigidity of the law, and equity comes into existence as a function of the chancellor of the chancellor in England, who says and they've got these maxims that you learn in law school, you know, equity. Okay, the law would permit a wrong without a remedy. Equity, on the other hand, will not permit a wrong without a remedy. Equity will try to find a way to square up the situation. And so change is inherent in the process. And that's why the Anglo-American tradition develops as a decisional-based law. The Napoleonic Code-derived legal systems and systems that arise from the ancient Roman tables and Justinian's tables and all are considerably, even dare I say, radically different systems. And so it's made to change, and the Constitution itself was designed to be to be able to fit the society as it expanded. As I noted, James Madison passed his presidency was saying, you know, we're going to have to expand the franchise beyond people who own property if this country is to succeed. Now, he was still talking about men and white men, but he was talking about an expansion of the right to vote, because otherwise it was going to, he saw it slipping into a grim oligarchy. You've got a system that has to be able to bend without breaking. Now, if you want to talk about the Lincoln era, where the real change comes is in the rise of the administrative state.
Now, that's part of it. Yeah, I just, you know, and like I said, I will toss this little nugget out and then I'll let you go. But I don't know if you guys, because like I said, I had to step away for a little bit to handle an issue, so I missed a little bit of the program. But if someone said it, then I'll apologize. But if they haven't, then you might get a kick out of, you're talking about the whole net neutrality thing. Well, within 2.5 hours of net neutrality being kicked off, Disney bought the bulk of the Murdoch media empire, including a majority stake in Hulu and several other of the platform systems. And I mean, within about 2 hours.
And it's report. Well, I mean, that was in the works beforehand. It was not just.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most fascinating aspects of that that I read was that it was being reported that before the sale went through, Trump had explicitly asked Rupert Murdoch whether Fox News was going to be part of the deal, and was reassured that no, it would not.
Yeah. But you see the handwriting on the wall. I mean, you're already getting the consolidation of any of the valuable platforms that are out there, so that a multi-tiered, oh, you want to see Hulu? Well, Hulu will have to pay for, you know, to get the really good download speed. They'll have to pay a bit of a premium to us, which, of course, Hulu will have to pass on to the customer in the form of a significant rate increase. And, you know, granted, it had been in the works for a while, but it's not something that is missed by people that, oh, they just happened to get it finished today. I have a strong suspicion that the whole sale was pending the official vote, and if had for some reason,
it could well have been. But I will add this as a caveat: net neutrality or no net neutrality. What really would provide a much more stable and controlling atmosphere would be a Congress and a court system and a White House that took the Sherman Antitrust Act seriously.
Oh, sorry. I got tickled for a minute there.
But your laugh is a sarcastic one, John. You know the reality of, you know, the truth of which I speak.
Oh no. I mean, I've been watching today. I had a chance to actually get, you know, to listen to the appropriate broadcasts and what have you, that actually broke down some of the tax bill that they're negotiating out. And this is, you know, the tax bill is totally designed as a quote unquote supply side economic horseshit that has the idea that if we give you more stuff, the economy will grow, without taking any consideration of the fact that, yeah, you want to have them produce more stuff, but the people out there are already tapped out. They can't buy any more stuff. And so this whole plan is just going to go right into the pockets of the shareholders and the freaking executives, and, you know, get their big fat bonuses. And people, a guy asked me today, and I don't have really necessarily the facts to prove it, but I have a suspicion, and I made this comment when a guy asked, he's like, wow, why is Bitcoin so high? And I said, well, I may be wrong about this, but stop and think about it. For the last 10 years, the Fed has been buying junk assets and filling the banks full of money, but the money's not being spent to build more factories or more stuff, but it's got to be invested somewhere. So housing rates in San Francisco, or like you say up in Marin County, $1 million a pop for, you know, for probably a two-bedroom with hot and cold running spiders. I mean, the money's being poured into all these so-called assets, and I'm imagining Bitcoin would be one of those ones that, and so all this
well,
hot money
and since we're talking about net neutrality, let's also note one other thing as we move toward the end of the program, because I haven't covered this story. Bitcoin is burning down the internet. Did you happen to run across that, John?
Oh yeah, Bitcoin mining is so resource intensive that it may actually
pose a risk to the internet itself.
Yeah, they had those. That's one of the problems they had down in Venezuela. Since their money down there isn't worth a shit, you've got a few people down there trying to mine just like one little Bitcoin, and it's knocking out their power grid. And the police have to go running around looking to find who's mining Bitcoin because they're blowing up our grid. Well, yeah, welcome to the modern world. The Internet of Things and the magic box, magic computers and magic money, and your toilet will eventually, you sit on it, it'll give you an entire medical degree examination to say, you're fat, you need to eat rice and tofu. That's our new world coming.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I read an article a couple days ago that they have, that are designing what's called a smart toilet. You sit down, you do your business, and the sensors will examine the quote-unquote product and do chemical analysis and do protein and see how much protein's in your, you know, whatever, you know, all the little things they can do chemically. And then we'll actually, you'll use Wi-Fi and internet to beam a message to your doctor saying, you know, this is what's going on now as part of the whole, you know, let's keep everybody at maximum health. And I'm like, okay, that's getting a little bit creepy when your toilet is spying on you. But welcome to the new world.
Yeah, I'm guessing I won't be buying one of those.
Well, right now, that's in testing phases, but, oh, well, you know.
I saw some other thing the other day about some article of someone saying that we will eventually pay massive taxes on meat.
Well, that new company that's in, I think it's a San Antonio company. It's got that artificial meat they created that they're now selling. They perfected the beef version, and they're either at or have already finished the chicken version, where they take stem cells or some type of protein cells from the animals, and they can infinitely regenerate them. And they're already selling hamburgers and stuff like that with it. And their idea is that this stuff is so much cheaper because there's no land involvement, energy costs are extremely low, there are much less transportation costs, and you get a far better, you know, according to them at least, a far more consistent quality. You don't have all the problems with the big feedlots and the stinks and all that stuff going with it. And they're actually supposedly, from what I read on the article, they're growing by leaps and bounds, and they're saying within that if they achieve the goal that they want, eventually within, say, you know, 15, 20 years, you won't see a feedlot out there because there'll be no need for them. And, you know, yay, I guess, you know, hamburgers in a test tube. Yay.
Well, we will exceed the carrying capacity of industrial meat farming, and in many ways are rapidly approaching it. You know, nobody else got too particularly upset about it, but when the Chinese bought Smithfield Meats, I went, ah. But
I transport this stuff all the time, and I mean, people don't realize that the Brazilians own JBS, which is like the first or second sized meat packing produce and all that stuff. So, I mean, most of our food's owned by foreign companies. You know, I'm carrying a load right now without going into great detail. That's that dying industry of cigarettes and tobacco. And because it's actually going overseas, amazing. Or not overseas, just over the border. I've got like all kinds of paperwork here because all the foreign countries, like Mexico, for instance, you got to actually have a certificate that says there's no GMO in there. And I'm going, damn, they're actually worried about GMO tobacco that you're going to smoke? That's getting wild. But, yeah.
Well, there's as a tobacco consumer, there's all the difference in the world between manipulated tobacco, such as goes into cigarettes, and the tobacco that you get from, say, a Cuban cigar.
Yeah, that's it's because it's all that you know, those thighs of the virgins rolling the paper that.
No, I don't think it's got anything to do with virgin thigh sweat, but. You know, it's nice to think it does.
You be good.
John, take care. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Safe travels. Everybody, John from Out on the Road. Time to get out of here. And thank you for taking a big old bite out of the fundraising hole. That takes a great weight off my mind. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news engines. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. Tell your friends and neighbors. I'd love to expand the dialogue. Get more people involved. Cuz this is a pretty special community we've built. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.